The path to success is rarely a straight line. And the path to success as a creative professional? That line tends to be especially squiggly. My name is Emmeline. I'm an independent recording artist, a singer-songwriter, a published author, and a lifelong creative. In my new series, Journey of an Artist, I talk to creatives from all walks of life about their passions, their paths, and the persistence they've employed to reach a point of professional and personal fulfillment. Throughout my journey, I've been blessed to interact with all kinds of artists, voice actors, poets, dancers, musicians, graphic designers, stylists, and more. In Journey of an Artist, we discuss the decisions they've made, the challenges they've faced, the obstacles they've overcome, and where they'd like their vision to take them next. We also reinforce the belief that with love, grit, perseverance, and an abundance of joy, anything is possible. You can live the life you want, the life that brings you the most joy, and my guests are living proof. This week, my guest is the musical jack of all trades, Mav Trax. Born Marcus Roberts, Mav Trax is the CEO and founder of MTI Music Solutions, a company that seeks to equip artists with the tools and team they need to succeed in the music industry. In his free time, Mav serves as chief of artist development at Dallas Music Network. He's here today to talk about his journey as a musical creative. Welcome back to Journey of an Artist. My name is Emmeline, and my guest today is the incredible Mav Trax. Mav, how's it going?
It's going great. How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks so much for being with us today.
No problem.
You came off quite a long shoot last night. Both of us work for Dallas Music Network, and you do all of the talent booking, and you oversaw 8 or 9 interviews last night?
Right.
Over the course of, 6 or 7 hours?
7 hours straight.
7 hours. It was a lot, but this is part of your new venture called MTI Solutions. You've had your hands on a lot of different things in the creative arts for a really long time, but especially in music. Can you tell me a little bit about what made you want to start your own talent development business?
I've seen that there are a lot of artists here that are really, really good that needed guidance, that needed just a little bit of boost or help or some resources and connections that they didn't have, and nobody was helping them, and I know how hard it can be to start up in this music industry. It's like, it's hard. It's not for the faint of heart. And I wish I would have had someone there to guide and help me and point me in the right direction on a lot of decisions that I made wrong when I was younger.
So when did you decide to get into music?
I've been wanting to do music forever. I remember mom showing me pictures of me at 2 trying to play piano and stuff like that. But when I actually went for it, I want to say I was about 20 years old. I had played trumpet throughout grade school and ended up getting a scholarship to go to Prairie View A&M University. And I was in the marching band there, but while I was there, I taught myself drum set and keys because I kind of just knew that those were instruments that people were going to always need. You always need a compliment. And 9 times out of 10, if you're somebody that's accompanying someone acoustically, it'd be an acoustic guitar, piano, one of those two instruments. Or if somebody wanted somebody in the band, and 9 times out of 10, something that drives the beat of a song is drums. So, and then also just being a boy and liking stuff to hit.
So it sounds like for you, a lot of what dictated your path was where you knew you would always be able to find work or find something that would inspire you.
Right. And just some stuff to make people move and inspire people. Like, I like being a part of the reason somebody feels a certain way in a positive way and versus in a negative way, like I used to could do when I was a kid. I was not the best kid.
Did music calm you down?
A lot. It kept me out of a lot of trouble.
Really? Was that just working in different bands, or was that just the act of sitting down and making it?
Really, it was a bit of both of them. I remember when I first started playing with my first actual group that I played for was this group called Common Folk, which consists of Terry Williams and Tony Ballard. Tony Ballard is with, he's one of the producers with Galaxy 9. You know, they won a top talent buyer this past year from the Dallas Observer Awards and stuff like that. But that was the first band I was in, and I was 23. I had only been playing for a few years, no guidance or nothing, but they saw something in me and put me in the band. And but really before that, and the reason I got in the band was a guy named Danny Lund, bass player. He saw that I had an ear for music. He was like, you should try to really, really get serious about playing keys. Just try to figure it out. And I remember at that time, you know, I was in between. I was kind of on the fence of whether I wanted to do music or just be a regular young guy and doing stuff. I was doing a lot of stuff as far as getting in trouble at the time. Then I had an incident that was like life-changing that made me go ahead and go all the way full throttle on music. It was an incident to where I had gotten into an altercation with somebody, and they actually showed up to a place like my friend Dan and I was talking about. I used to play his uncle's church, me and him and my brother Darius. But one Sunday morning, somebody came by the church and they were there to actually shoot me. And I didn't even know that they were there. But one of the deacons of the church stopped them in the parking lot. And, you know, that could have been my last day here. And I was like, I don't think I want to just be running around and getting in trouble no more. Maybe I should just, I need to find something to do besides getting into altercations with people.
Yeah.
So, music. And I was like, because you could have quickly been gone had the dude not been in the parking lot.
Yeah, that sounds like a really profound experience.
Yeah.
To sort of realize this is a moment where my life could have ended, but it's also a moment where my life can begin, depending on the choice that I make next.
Right. Life was then. That's what I always tell the kids and other artists that I mentor now is that good decisions is the single most important thing that you can do in your life, because everything is about the choice. Everything is a result of choices you make.
Yeah, that's a really powerful statement, that it is all about the choice that you sit down and make. And it's also, it sounds like, about the work that you put into yourself, because the next choice for you was to dedicate time, right, to becoming better at this thing.
Right, and to dedicate myself to moving away from things that didn't serve me well, like just getting in trouble and, you know, the tough guy part.
Yeah, so a little column A, a little column B.
Yeah.
So were the keys really the first instrument into which you deep dove after trumpet?
No, it was really drums. I remember at that church, though, I was playing keys. I actually had a key to the church, and they would allow me to go in there so that I could practice and get better, you know. And I really spent majority of that time playing drums. So I started actually gigging in Dallas, like on a professional level, on drums first. I was a drummer, and I met like most of the people that I know now, really playing drums instead of keys.
That's really cool. So how many bands did you play drums in?
I played in at least four or five. And I actually like the band that I was saying that was the first actual like real working band that I played in. I actually doubled. Like whenever my brother couldn't make it, I'd play drums instead of keys.
So the versatility has served you really well, too. The ability to go back and forth.
Right. Yeah, that always is a help. The more hats you can wear, the better off you are, the more you can work. So I preach that too. Like, you know, I ended up adding bass and guitar to later. So
do you find that so now you produce artists, do you find that playing all of those instruments is able to help you flesh their sound out more?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I don't have to rely on samples. I don't have to call a bunch of different guys to be session people. I can just sit in the lab and knock it out myself.
Yeah. Was that a goal of yours, or was that just something that sort of happened?
It was something that happened, but it was also, it happened out of necessity. You know, it comes from being a producer and then realizing you got to get this and this done. And then you sitting there waiting for parts and somebody's waiting for their music. And like, okay, you know what? If I could play all of it myself, I wouldn't have to wait on anybody. So, and plus I just like, I've always liked guitar. Like, I think when I was a kid, if I had the choice to choose the first instrument I played would have been guitar. I actually had a guitar when I was 11, but they took it from me from playing it too much.
Oh no. Just because there was too much noise in the house?
Yeah, just making up too much noise. I mean, I was like, it's better than the drums.
I was going to say, I don't get a drum kit in my apartment. They would kick me out. But you have a whole setup now. You have a studio.
Yep.
Off the side of your house where people can come and record, and you call it your lab, right?
Right.
That's awesome. So when you were putting together MTI Solutions, was that a vision that you had as you were learning all of these instruments, was that you would ultimately become a one-stop shop, or was that just something that you realized people needed?
Like I said, most of it was out of necessity, but MTI is not, it's not more necessarily about unity and not having to go at this harsh music or alone, like especially for people that are breaking into it new. And I feel like people that are you know, experts and have a lot of experience and a lot of knowledge in all of these areas, I feel like it's our duty to like get it to people that's coming behind us, because they'll have a better chance if they learn stuff faster than we did, if they are afforded that knowledge sooner than we got it. You know, so it's more so, MTI is more so about being a beacon, being a place where somebody can come and know that, okay, cool, if I go over there, I'm gonna get it, and I'm gonna get to where I want to be skill wise. I'm gonna have a lot more resources. I'll be in a lot of better. After experience being an MTI, I have a lot more, a lot better chance at really, really making it to where I want to do, or where I want to be.
And so one of the things that you offer is this network, right? You've talked about giving them access to people who can help them, kind of cutting down the learning curve, which in music can be so steep.
Yeah, definitely.
So how did you amass that network for yourself?
Years and years, at least a couple of decades of relationships, growing up around the right people, growing up making sure I kept in contact with people that wanted something that I knew were going to be great, you know? Because I remember growing up with a lot of people that we were all trying to do the same thing. We were playing keyboards and, you know, and everybody wanted to be play music and get famous for making music and all of that stuff. And a lot of those people that I knew that were doing the same thing as me, they ended up venturing off into other stuff and finding other things. Like one of my friends is a movie director. He's done 4 or 5 movies now, and that's an end. And then I got people that are friends now that are, they produce, but now they're label execs. Now they have venues or access to venues that, you know, that we didn't have when we were younger. And then just throughout experiencing situations, making sure I networked when I was at shows and making sure I found out who did this and who did that and who's in charge of booking and who's the person over here that produces these artists. Who's producing this style of music that I'm not producing? Like, you know, just finding the things around me over the span of 20, 25 years.
Yeah. So really going through the process of.
Yeah. Basically just getting at what they would say out the mud, just getting it, just experience. Experience is the best teacher. Nothing teaches better than experience.
Yeah. Are there specific mentors who stand out to you or specific experiences that stand out to you as you look back on your amassing these relationships?
It's a few mentors that, like, and I'll say big brothers, even if we've fallen out or had differences at times. I know for a fact that, of course, Danny Lyons, I've already mentioned his name, Terry Williams. Like, Terry Williams is the leader of Common Folk. He still is today, and he's the business guy, but he's actually, like, he's the booking manager for Ricky Smiley now. So it's like, you know, everybody's doing something big that they didn't know that they'd be doing. I'm going to have to say, like, I'll just go from the front. I'll go from the front, because I've actually experienced a couple of people that kept me focused, that gave me good knowledge about being able to build things. Danny, first with all, Danny Lyons and Terry, of course, with that situation. But Danny was the one that kind of just heard, like, you could probably really do this. And, you know, he was like a big brother. He was out. He's like the, he's the cool. I used to get mess with him and call him Pretty Chico, because, you know, the girls loved him, and he's a bass player, and he's just so nonchalant and cool and chill. And I learned how to kind of stay out of the way of things because of him. And ironically, that story I told about me almost getting shot was actually behind me, behind somebody trying to mess with him, or, you know, come after him. And, you know, he was like, you can't just say stuff that you don't, you know, because there's people out here that actually want to go ahead and follow through with it because they know you will follow through with it at this time. And they don't try to get you first. So I know you was taking over, but it's like, focus on this, do this, because this is going to keep you out of trouble. And, you know, I just would watch how he would handle certain situations. He never really lost his cool, so he taught me how to keep my cool. And then in that experience of going through Common Folk is when I kind of, like, got into meeting Gino Eichelhart, which he is actually the GM at Freeman Jazz Cafe, which was, like, the only spot everybody could play during the pandemic.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, one of the only spots, but, like, you know, meeting him through the Common Folk situation, and then I got to play a couple of gigs with him. Then we did, like, I would say what really groomed me was this, that we, it was a music festival called the I Got Soul Music Fest, DJ Frances J, I don't know if you know who she is, but she's, like, one of the most amazing DJs. Like, she gets people booked on, she's one of the ways you can get booked on a Capital Jazz cruise.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so you know, that experience was crazy because, like, Gino put together a band of people that, like, everybody was kind of overlooking. Mm-hmm. For it. That's how he felt. He felt we was like the ruffians, that's what he, you know, said, like, y'all were the people that y'all was roughing. and just people don't want to deal with y'all because y'all were outspoken. Y'all were the new people. They didn't really see what he seen back then. And he put this band together. And we did this conference. It was a soul music conference. I think I want to say we had to learn a good 80 or 90 songs because we played for, a good 10, 15 artists at that conference. And it was like I was a new keyboard player. So I had to learn that many songs and rehearse for weeks. Not only did I have to learn those songs, he actually gave me 3 or 4 artists and said, "You're the music director for these." Wow. So you're running the band for these. And he immediately threw us in the fire, he threw us in a bonfire. You know, because that experience was crazy. And then we were playing with people like Robbie from ATL, Cy Smith when she first came out, Algebra Blissett, Eric Robeson, Liv Warfield. It's just like all these artists that are emerging now, Carmen Rogers, who's with Foreign Exchange. I can't even remember and name all the artists because it was so many. It was so many artists. But that experience was it can get, that showed us how intense it can get at times if you really like are over something like huge like that. So when he did that and we actually like rose to the occasion, everybody was like, "Oh, they are good. Oh, those people are good. They are right then. Okay. Because I remember like when he started bringing me around, like the in crowd. I used to get a lot of backlash. They were like, "Why do y'all keep letting him play at the jam sessions? He's not a real keyboard player. Da 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 da. Who is he?" And this, and that. You know, people are definitely like, they don't want anybody that's different that they can't control or that they don't know about. And sometimes, you know, people fear the unknown too. They don't know you know, for some silly reason in music, people think because somebody else is good that you have to hold them back in order for you to be good or be seen and stuff like that. So, you know, just different things. But yeah, he looked past that and like that band was just really, it's funny to like, let's see who I was doing what now, like, yeah. And it was a few different bands, but like the core band that he had to where we had to like, we actually play with all those different artists. And then one of the days of the festival, cause it was a 1, 2, 3, 4 day festival. We played over the span of 4 days with all these artists. And one of the days, it was a big review that we did a bunch of cover songs, but all those artists on the same set. So, I'm trying to remember just everybody that was playing and then singing. But I know the core band, it was like Xavier Jackson, who is now like an amazing blues artist, and he was Lucky Peterson. I know you heard of Lucky Peterson. He's like blues legend. Before he died, that was Lucky Peterson's last keyboard player.
Wow.
And Lucky Peter was his mentor, so he's like the next best thing to a Lucky or going to see Lucky Peterson play a jazz set. And he also, indeed, the whole, that Heal America tour that Emma Smith was doing and all those, you know, NFL legends that put that together with Emma Smith and Bishop Omar Janwa, that really did a lot of stuff for our community, period, even the music community. Then you had Mem Keys, You know, and then Justin Lyons, who's like the guitar player for, I'm not sure if you're familiar with K-pop music.
Oh, yeah.
He's the guitar player for Blackpink. He's
Oh,
the
very
guitar.
cool.
Yeah, and he also plays for Big Bang, which is basically Big Bang. Blackpink is a spinoff of the Big Bang situation. He also has played with Blink-182. He's played with Lil Wayne. He's like all over the place. He got his own studio. He got his own production crew. And this was somebody I was taking to his guitar lessons when he was five.
That's awesome.
You know what I'm saying? When he was young, you know what I'm saying? So
so you got to watch artists grow up too.
I grew up with a lot of people that are doing amazing stuff. Yeah. And, you know, it's just that experience, but that was all that stuff was in lieu of Geno Sansom and all of us. Brian Qualls was on bass, who like he's like one of the top bassists that's out there running, you know, the top 40 scene right now. And he's a great MD himself. He plays keys, drums, and bass with all of those instruments. Everybody that I named are multi instrumentalists, you know, they can play more than one instrument.
Yeah.
But at the time, like, nobody was really paying attention to those people, you know. Mm-hmm. But get the squad. And then we ended up becoming a band named after his grandmother called Ivory Jean. But then once we started doing Ivory Jean, I guess he saw a little bit more out of me than the rest of the situation then, because I mean, Justin actually started playing a lot with the people that everybody sees as the gatekeepers here and all of that, for as musicians and stuff, all the, you know, the Badu Band Cats and, you know, Snarky Puppy Cats and all of that. But Geno was like, you can lead more than just on stage. I see that. So he started pushing me into a way of actually like hosting and booking bands and doing stuff like that at this place called Firewater, which is now, I think it's still Gas Monkey. You know, Gas Monkey, they had those two places. They had the outdoor spot and then they had the one by the movie theater over there, mm-hmm. Northwest Highway. The outdoor spot used to be Firewater before it was Gas Monkey. Mm-hmm. And we used to have like a major artist. I think I played for a lot of artists there. Carl Thomas, Bobby Brown, Jodeci, Bumby, like a bunch of major artists there. And we, but not only was I, we, I was actually hosting the show. He ended up talking to the people that was curating the show, promoting the show, and saying, yo, he actually hosts the show. And I ended up actually being the host of it and booking all the acts for it.
That's incredible.
So I was simultaneously, I would go home and host, come off, talk to the band that whatever band was hired, play with them with the artists, and then continue to host.
That's crazy.
And it was a great, crazy time. And I know at that time, like, I started kind of slipping back into old habits at that time. And then Geno came to me and was like, bro, you're in a band that's named after my grandma. You can't be the person that you were when you were younger, bro. Mm. You're not him. You've already stopped being that. You're not him no more because you already been doing stuff to stay away from that. Yeah. So back into it, you know, he kept me, he refocused my mind. He was like, you're going to either have to, if you won't be that person, fine, but you can't be that person to be in this band.
So it sounds like you had sort of a combination of experiences. One was that you said yes to a lot of things that you weren't sure you were ready for.
Right.
But you were like, I'm going to throw myself into this, like hosting,
yeah,
music directing. Like, I'm going to throw myself into it and just hope it works out because I really care about this and I don't want to say no. And right. Also, you had the experience of this beautiful thing that you'd chosen, sort of reminding you of who you are at your core.
Yeah.
And keeping you on the straight and narrow and keeping you on a path that was fruitful for you.
It helped change me in a better way. Like music, my friend James Brown has the shirt that that's been really selling and doing really well across the world for him that says music saved my life.
Oh. And that's
really the truth.
That's really cool. So yeah. for you that resonates.
Yeah, it does. Very much so. And then, you know, what's funny about that is like, man, was playing for a great artist that we have in our city that's really persistently on Billboard named Vandell Andrew. He's a saxophonist. We were playing a show with him in Plano, and James was sitting in on drums. Like, he was subbing for the normal drummer, which is Dakita Jones, a female drummer, which is really good. But he was there that day, and he was like, man, I want to do these shirts, but I don't know if it's going to be a waste of time, what you think? And I said, bro, if you don't go for that, you're crazy. I think you're going to really, really make a big, big difference. I really think that everybody's going to mess with it. They're going to buy the shirts. He was like, you for real? You think so? I'm going to try it, bro. I think I'm going to try it. And now, like, you see everybody across the world wearing that shirt.
That's so cool.
I'll say, like, yeah, I've seen a bunch of major musicians wearing their shirt.
Really?
I got a picture of Marcus Miller with one on. Of course, the Snarky Puppy Cats have them. Like, a lot of people have those shirts, you know. If you go, I think his tag is musical living or something like that. If you go to his website, you will see like pictures of some of your favorite musicians in the world wearing the shirt, which is cool. And you know, those are the moments that I like remembered to, like, those are my Grammys to me. Those are more important than Grammys to me, because those were the moments that I felt I made a difference. Somebody in the right way instead of negative, you know, instead of body to do something that really wasn't going to benefit them the best. You know, I invited to be great. And that makes me feel good to do that. That makes me feel like I'm fulfilling a purpose when I do those.
Yeah.
So that's, and ultimately, like, that's why doing what I do with MTI, because I want to make a difference.
Yeah, I think that's really beautiful. And MTI launched in COVID, right?
Yeah, man, which was pretty difficult to do. And, you know, it's still an ongoing process. We're still just piecing together things, but we got a really, really good crew of people that's really, really doing great things. I have some of the best writers and singers that are in the city on my squad, and I'm just happy to, like, be able to push them, and they're happy to be here with the family of MTI. So it's a great thing. It's just really, really, really dope how everything is turning out. It's not by far an easy road at all, but it's great. You know, it's really, really good. So we hanging, pushing them, because I'm really, like, I told everybody that I talk to that wants to know about what my purpose is, I was like, I really believe my purpose is to be a really big part of why Dallas becomes an industry city like LA, Atlanta, or New York, because we should have been one 30 years ago in my eyes, because we have too much talent here that has touched the industry and created a lot of sounds that we are hearing and that we love and that we hear on mainstream music that nobody's really got the credit they deserve on.
Yeah, I think that's really beautiful. I love that you highlight the importance of Dallas music, because I think that speaks to a little bit how you and I met, which is an organization called Dallas Music Network.
Right. Yeah. happen to actually be the chief of development for it now. I started off as a performer in June during COVID, and then by January 2021, I was the chief executive of development in the talent corner. And just getting in, working hard, showing people what you can do and trying to make the right connections. And Dallas Music Network plays a really huge part to me in the possibility of us becoming an industry city. Because, you know, it's just, we got to build a machine and we got to have those resources and relationships that can actually make calls and do things, you know, get things done for these artists.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, we talk a lot in meetings about being aligned in that mission, about helping artists find their audience, helping artists be able to create that impact that you and I both feel is so important. We had Bev Furley Perry on the show, who is our executive director, and she was talking about that mission and how passionately she feels about giving artists a voice. And it sounds like that's something that is also really important to you. And more even than giving them a voice is, once they found their voice, helping them find ways to amplify it so they don't get discouraged.
Right. Because it's easy to want to quit doing this. It really is. Like, I've had everybody that's really good has had a moment to where they said that they couldn't do it. That it was that maybe I should be doing something else. Maybe I should just go teach. Maybe I should just go find something else to do, because it's not, you know, I'm struggling financially. I'm all over the place. I feel like I'm exhausted, and there's always somebody that's better than me. And maybe it's not for me. Everybody has those moments of doubt, you know. And it's good to have a nucleus or people around you to push you past those points, because if you don't get past those points, you ultimately end up believing those thoughts, those negative thoughts, and you stick with them and you quit. And it's sad. I've had some of the most amazing people just stop doing it.
So you sound like you know that journey. You sound like those voices are familiar to you, like you've heard them yourself before.
Yes, I hear them a lot of times.
So what in your journey helps you push through that? How do you combat those voices personally?
You gotta just have a heart for this stuff. You gotta really love doing this to get past those moments. Cause it has to really be what's in your heart to do. It gotta be what you wake up thinking about, what you go to sleep thinking about doing. It gotta be a part of you. They gotta be a part of you that just says, hell with it, I'm gonna keep going. I know it's hard, but I gotta keep going. I can't quit. You know, it just gotta be a part of you that just will not yield to that. You gotta have it's a certain level of heart desire that you just gotta develop to get past those moments, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
Those moments come often in this lifestyle. Like, those are going to be, bro, this is one of the hardest things to get, you know, consistent and residual income from, is music, especially initially. I, you know, tell everybody, hey, man, the best thing you can do is listen to information and use it to the best of your ability. But understand that, on average, you're going to spend a decade of your life trying to make this work. So
before it works.
You're going to spend at least a decade. On average, at least 90% of us are going to use a decade of our lives before it even works to where we consider this a lifestyle. What we do, you know what I'm saying? A purpose of our profession. I career. It's not easy. It's not easy to do this, even though it's way easier now because of the internet. But, you know, just imagine how it was before MySpace, before all of those initial things that made it easy to get people to see you. So, you know, we're in a lot better space now with technology. And I just feel if we're start like in Dallas, if we would just come together more, if we would work together more, if we would do things and push each other to, you know, not quit, but also support each other. Like, I've done this, and people look at me like, my teammates used to look at me crazy at first, but then they start realizing that makes all the sense in the world. I was like, I have artists come to me that I'm not the best person to produce them, or none of the people on the squad, and I'll direct them to the best person that is. I'll direct them straight to another production company or another, because we're more than a production company. I'll shoot them to somebody else to do management for them. I'll shoot them to somebody else to do this, and this, because I really, my genuinely want people to go to where they're going to be best suited. Mm-hmm. And that's because, like, why make somebody waste time? We don't have the COVID is proven, and proven again now, that we don't have the time that we think, you know, because recently it's been a lot of people dying from the Delta strand of COVID. Yeah. And, you know, I've heard there's talks of them actually doing another shutdown in October. Mm. So, you know, it's like people just got to get ready for this. This is, you know, it's the reality right now. And it's just learn. I think one of the best things you can do in this life is learn how to deal with what is real, what is reality. Mm. Yes, focus on the dream, but also be in touch with reality. Because that's the only way. If you can't get to the dream ignoring reality. You can't do it. And you gotta find the best route. You know, it's just like saying that a safe house is 100 yards that way, and you got a pit of dogs over here that you can fall in, and, you know, or, you know, quicksand over here in different spots. Like, if you ignore the fact, I'm gonna be miraculous. I'm gonna be like Jesus and walk on quicksand. If you go in that quicksand, you're out of there. Oh, I'm tough. Nobody can beat me. Though that pack of dogs over there, that's wild dogs, will eat you alive. Be realistic and take the routes you need to take to get to the goal. Hmm. You know?
Yeah, Jason Mraz has a song called Be Where Your Feet Are.
And that makes all the sense in the world.
You have to just sort of make peace where you are.
Yeah, make peace where you are and try to live in the moment as much as possible.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that speaks to, you know, sort of that mentality that you talk about as artists, where we can get overwhelmed when we think about the future, we can get overwhelmed when we think about the past, because if we think too hard about where we've been, you know, we forget where we are. And we start thinking, what if I get back there? How do I avoid this, you know?
Sorry about that. That was my
computer. No, you're good.
Oh, man. Go ahead. I'm sorry, say that again.
No, you're good. I said, you know, as artists, if we think too hard about the past, we can get sucked back into it.
Every time.
And if we think too hard about the future, sometimes we can let that fear eat us alive or paralyze us, which is almost worse.
Yeah, it's way worse. That's way worse to, like, just be stuck and just kind of, like, be, or you can't move, and but you, it's like looking at something you can't have.
Yeah.
You know, and like really being distraught about it.
Yeah, for sure. So I love that you've brought this group of people together at MTI that helps artists get out of those moments. Do you find yourself giving a lot of pep talks? Do you sit down with artists a lot and just sort of talk them through those emotional moments?
Every week, every day. Every other day, almost, just like I have some of the greatest people, and some of the greatest people that don't see how great they are sometimes. Mm. And, you know, but that's a norm though. Like, that's even with people that I'm mentoring outside of that. Like, this is one kid that's a rapper, but he plays football. He goes by Justice. He has a single out, but Kid is great. Kid is great. Kid is great. He quits every 2 days. Quits every 2 days. Like, I mean, you know, emotionally and mentally, right? He's in a bad state, but he's gonna get past it because he's too good not to. You know, I just look at his social media sometimes, and it's like, it's sad, man. At the same time, though, to just see somebody so young, just like, I'll probably be dead soon or something like that. Worry about this, and then, well, I'm gonna make it today, and y'all gonna believe in me, man. I don't need to do this no more. I quit. I ain't doing music no more ever again. Check out this song I'm about to put out. Like, woo. I'm like, you take us on such an emotional roller coaster, bro. With your social media alone. And I'm like, well, I love that kid, though. I do. I want him to make it so bad. And he's just up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. I'm like, oh. And I got people that I've been dealing with for years, for at least almost 15, 20 years, man, that still don't believe in themselves like anymore. Why is it okay if you want to quit, then just if you really, 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 really want to quit, why don't you just quit? Because you don't want to. Nobody does something for a decade that they don't want to do. Nobody does. Bro, I don't see nobody actually do. Like, honestly, that's how I know. If I see somebody doing music past 3 to 5 years, bro, this is what you want to do.
Huh. You think if you're staying at that long?
Bro, you can't stay in music for 3 to 5 years and not really want to do this within your heart.
Yeah.
You can't do anything that long. Like, for real. After 5 years or something, you kind of get fed up, especially if it's something that, like, you know, I want to, but I don't really want to.
Yeah.
I could do some. I let me find what else I'm good at. And when I find that, and then I'll fall in love with that, and then I'll be over this. Yeah. It don't matter what I find out I can do. I'm still going to want to play. I still sit in this studio as much as I'm producing and being a music executive now. I still got to find time to play because that's just what soothes me.
Yeah. That's such an important message that we have to find time, even especially if we're pursuing it on a professional level,
right,
to find the joy in our art again, to get in touch with the little aspects of it that just bring us joy. And maybe those are things that further the career, and maybe they're not. I mean, really, any work that you put into your art is going to further your career. But I think we do have to get back to those moments of joy. I love that you highlight that it's important to just sit down and play.
Yeah, I can't be mad playing music. I can't be sad playing music. Like, it instantly takes away the negativity. Like, really, really does. It's kind of like music is an escape from reality sometimes for the people that do it. Like, people are like, oh, I'm so inspired by the way you sound and you sound great. I was like, you just don't know that you're enjoying the way it sounds and the way it feels, because it's actually me. It's actually taking away bad feelings. And I used to always have this saying, like, hurt, pain, and sadness make some of the most beautiful music. And I was like, because we as minstrels or people that are gifted with the ability to have music and natural talent in it and talent of a certain level of music, that's our vice. Like, that's the thing that kind of like takes us away from, it takes us out of the moment of anxieties and hurt, you know. Like, I remember, like, that's the one thing me and my kid would, like, share, like, we can't be sad playing.
That's the safe space, right?
Yeah, it's like looking at him like, don't nothing make my son AD happier than playing drums.
AD was on the show last night. He was one of our interviews, and he talks exactly about that, about the joy of playing music and about how much he loves diving more deeply into the drums.
Right.
And how much joy that gives him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, it's just, that's our escape.
So if you have people who are listening to the podcast right now who are thinking, wow, I'd really love to get into music. It sounds difficult. I don't know if I have what it takes. What advice do you have for those people?
Give it 3 to 5 years, bro. Like, seriously, like, if you really, if it's something you're really interested in doing for real, there's going to be a fight between you, who you are, and life. Mm. For a span of 3 to 5 years that you'll find out if that's really what you're going to do. Mm. Either you go through the gauntlet or you let the gauntlet take you back to here and make you go somewhere else. That's just what it is. Like, either that's what it's going to be. You know, so, but you can do it though. You can go through the gauntlet. There's too many people who've made it through it.
So it's about not being afraid to do the hard stuff.
Don't be afraid to do the hard stuff. Don't be afraid to, when it gets hard, it's going to get hard. So just be prepared for it mentally. It's going. Yeah, you can. It's inescapable.
Yeah.
Period.
But what I hear you saying is that when it gets hard, you have to return to that love of it. Mm-hmm. Find little ways to remind yourself how much you love it.
Mm-hmm.
And B, you have to not let the fact that it's hard make you feel like that means it's not meant for you.
Exactly. So. You just got to push through. You have to push through those moments. You have to, I remember the song that made me fall in love with music completely, to where I was like, you know what? It's the music. It's not the attention. It's not the camaraderie of being around a bunch of people all the time or being revered. It's the music that makes this stuff. It's just the feeling, this feeling right here is what counts in music. That's going to make me get over the hump and make me not quit. I remember I was driving with my friend, his name is Abe Williams. He was the band director at Kimball High School.
Mm-hmm.
For a while. We were at Prairie View together marching. He was trumpet player, I was trumpet player. We were going, I think he was getting a new map, so we had to drive from Prairie View or Hempstead basically to Houston, which is about, you know, an hour or so drive. And we got there and we were riding, no AC, like, you know, it was freshman college kid.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hot. It was like, oh, it was a miserable ride. But Michael Jackson's Can't Help It came on. And, you know, Stevie Wonder wrote that and George Duke played key bass on it. And I'm listening to the way it, like, just the sonics of it and the way that it made me feel. And I was like, oh, what song is this? He was like, bro, you ain't never heard that song? I was like, no, what song is this? If I heard it, I would have said, oh, I know this song. I asked for a reason. I don't know the song, Abe. What song is this? Oh, this is, it's called I Can't Help It by Michael Jackson. But I think Stevie Wonder wrote it for him. And then to be able to, like, really listen to it and like, you can hear certain things in it that lets you know that that's Stevie Wonder. And you're like, oh, man. And then I'm like, then you could look up credits on records, you know. And so he was like, there is George Duke on bass, on key bass. I'm like, ooh, that's why that key bass sounds like that. That's why it's so groovy. Okay, cool. And I just remember how that made me feel, and how it made me like, oh yeah, this, yeah, I gotta go after that feeling. I gotta create that feeling myself. You know, okay, that's the feeling I want from every song or every record I produce. Like, I want that feeling.
Wow. Yeah, that same kind of fills you up.
Yeah.
Moment of just ecstatic joy.
Yeah. So, you know, it's like I remember every stage of me, and like me and that song have had a relationship since that day. Like, I remember going back, we had like practice rooms at PV. I remember going and sitting down and just playing it over and over again. And so I felt like I had it. And then when I came back home and went to Dallas and got around Geno, and then they had this little spot. Interestingly enough, it was 369. It was like, you know, there was a period where Deep Ellum was dead, but before that it was jumping like it is now. Mm-hmm. Jumping period. The same guy that did Heal America, Bishop Omar Jarwar, who's deceased because of COVID, rest his soul. He's had a spot called 369 where everybody was, it was the jam session spot at the time. And I remember meeting Bernard Wright. I don't know if you're hip to who Bernard Wright is. Bernard Wright, he's like one of the most incredible musicians of our time. Like, he's been sampled so many times by so many different people. And it's crazy, like the samples are samples of his record. Bernard Wright was 15 years old out of New York, but you know, he's been in Dallas a lot of his life too as well. He was 15 years old. His drummer was a 14-year-old Dennis Chambers, and his bass player was a 16-year-old Marcus Miller. And that album is still one of the most well-played albums I've ever heard. And like, and then he chose to make another song called "Who Do You Love? Are You For Sure?" That's
yeah.
So, and then that, of course, that song got sampled over and over by LL Cool J and different artists. That one song, and then you got back when hip hop was like really, really conscious hip hop, like the Tribe Called Quest days. There was this group called Ski Lo, I think. That I wish I was a little bit taller. I wish I was a baller. I wish I couldn't. That song. So, and that's a sample of a Bernard Wright bridge in a song from the album Nard.
No way. I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yeah. Bernard Wright is, and Bernard, I'm talking about Snoop Dogg has sampled some Bernard Wright songs. I mean, he's one of the most sampled artists in the world. And so I walked in, I went on the, but that's the backstory to this part of the story. When I go into that jam session, I'm in there and I'm the new cat, and everybody, you know, everybody kind of like still watching because I was around the people that didn't think I would be able to still be doing that. And I walk in, I'm playing the song. I'm playing a couple of the chords of it wrong, because they, you know, they were just like, oh, okay, we're gonna bring this person up, and they'll actually let you start the song out so you can play something that you knew, and that most likely they knew they were gonna know too. So I picked that song, and I was on organ, and Bernard Wright came and sat next to me and started playing keys, because he was like, because it was not the normal song that everybody would be playing. And I'll play that song, and everybody's like, okay, cool. And I was playing it, but the thing about, at the time, I loved the song so much, I knew all the parts. So while I was playing the organ of the chords, I would play up top, I would play what would be the string line and melody line of the string, the counter melody of the string line that nobody pays attention to for the bridge. And I started playing it, and Bernard looked at me and said, okay. And then when we finish playing the song, we get down, we're everybody's hanging around outside. He comes walking, hey kid, come here. He was like, yo, you know what? Out of all these jokers around here that's playing this song, you the one, you groovy, man. I like the way you played the song, because he's like, you actually like pay attention to all the parts of the song. He said, I've never heard none of all these cats that you are revering and all these cats you're looking up to, none of them play that string line, bro. Your ears are wide open and I would love to teach you. So Bernard Wright was one of the piano teachers. I actually ended up having the key to this dude's house at one point.
That's incredible.
And yes, from that moment though, and I remember having that lesson with him, because when he brought me in, he was like, the funny thing is, I can see that you're kind of like, you're still green and there's still some chords I gotta bring across your ear. And he showed me, I was playing the very first chord of the song completely wrong. All those years, he was like, no, it's really this. I was like,
you're like, what?
He was like, yes, this, you should listen to it, nephew, listen. I was like, dang, okay. And I had to, I told Gino about the experience, and he was like, see, he was like, yeah. He said, Bernard, I had a change of life. He was like, honestly, it might not be a bad idea to go relearn the stuff that you think you know.
Yeah.
But you don't know it.
I really appreciate you sharing that story, because that's proof that no matter how good we think we are, no matter how deep we think we're in it, when somebody comes along with more wisdom than you, there's always something that they can share that's going to deepen your understanding.
Even about things that you think you're 100% good at. Sometimes you can be wrong, and then, you know, you just got to be open to the instruction of it.
You'll need a refresher.
Yeah, you know. And I got one over that song. Like, that song changed everything for me.
That's so cool. Thank you so much for sharing that story. That's awesome.
No problem. Yeah, that's just, like, I have a million stories. Of course, as you can see, I can go on tandems. But everything is tied. It's like, everything that I've experienced so far is like tied together in some kind of way.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it's tied together in your experience and in the music you make.
Mm-hmm. And it's tied together in a lot of different experiences, Dallas, period. You know, just like everything is connected in some kind of way. It is. It's just weird, but it's exciting too at the same time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mav, thank you so much for taking the time to hang out with us today.
No problem. No problem.
Your time is a hot commodity, my friend. So it's so good to connect with you and to hear your stories and to hear a little bit more about your background. Thank you so much for sharing all of this with our audience and for sharing your encouragement.
Thank you for doing this show. Like, this is a great show.
Thanks.
Good for people to be able to like hear these stories and, you know, get this encouragement and inspiration of like, oh, I'm not alone in that, you know. Yeah, you know, and that's, like I said, that's the whole premise in TI. Just y'all are not alone.
So if people are listening and they're thinking, MTI sounds like the place I need to be, or Mav sounds like he knows who I need to know, where's the best place for them to find you?
The best place to find me is at www.mtimusicsolutions.com, the website, or if you're just mainly on social media, you can go to our IG at MTI Music Soul LLC. Mm-hmm. So it's going to look like three I's, but it's really all L's. But and then just music, MTI Music Solutions on Facebook. We also have a YouTube channel as well, MTI Music Solutions. If you want to just come to me personally, I'm at Mav Tracks on all three of those as well.
And that's MAVTRAXX.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. Correct. If people are listening on the radio, that's MTIMusicSolutions.com. If you're listening on a podcast, all you have to do is scroll up and click. Mav, we're going to play people out with some of your tunes. But in the meantime, I just want to say thanks again. It's such a pleasure always to see your face and to benefit from your wisdom. Thanks so much, my friend.
Thank you. Same you. Same. Always great to see you. And that smile. And then hosting voice.
Yes. Well, you know, we try. Have a great one, my friend. And thanks so much. And listeners, we'll see you soon.
All right.
Thanks so much for joining me for this week's episode of Journey of an Artist, featuring Mav Trax. To learn more about Mav Trax or to follow his journey, follow him on social media at Mav Trax. That's at MAVTRAXX. You can also find his company, MTI Music Solutions, at mtimusicsolutions.com. For behind-the-scenes information and more about Journey of an Artist, you can follow me, Emmeline, on social media at Emmeline Music. That's at EMMELINE Music. Journey of an Artist airs Sunday nights at 5 p.m. Central Standard Time on DeepLM Radio and is available as a podcast the very next day. My other show, Journey of a Song, airs Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time on DeepLM Radio, and past episodes are available wherever you listen to podcasts. I'll see you next week with brand new episodes. Until then, stay passionate.